Good morning. Boker Tov, and welcome to everybody. I've had a reminder that people should turn their phones off. We, or Miriam, is always on that. That people should turn their phones off, and we say it every week, and there's always a phone that goes off. There's been a formal complaint lodged against the shir with the OU about my shir. That 2 weeks ago I spoke about marshmallows and jello. Last week I spoke about cheese, and this week I'm speaking about wine, and I never brought in any samples for people to eat. And people have said that's unfair, because if they hear all about this, they want to eat it. So all I can tell you is you can make a complaint to the OU about that. No, not to me. Maybe we can have a little bit of a tasting session. You can ask. You can ask. Now, today's offering deals with the issue of wine. In particular, the issue of wine and non-observant Jews. On a personal level, I prefer the expression non-observant Jews to non-religious Jews, because I don't know about you, but I can't see into anyone's neshama, so I don't know who is religious and who isn't religious. But it's easier to see who is observant and who is less observant, and perhaps less judgmental on mountain faces. And the scenario is a common one. You go to a nice wine tasting at the Israel Museum, and they bring out a bottle of wine, and let's assume that all the wine is kosher wine. They're not going to bring out a tray for wine. I'm sure you can go to other places in Israel where you will find non-kosher wine, but let's say it's all good kosher wine. And along comes a young man without a kippah, or a young girl who seems not to be from the religious community, although again it's hard to tell, we'll talk about that too, and pours you the wine. Is there any issue there? Do we have any concern? Do we want our wine to be poured by people who are Shomrei Shabbat? Or is that not something which is required halachically? So that's what I want to deal with today. It's a complex topic. It's going to take us on the highways and byways of all sorts of historical, sociological questions, and yain, nesach, etc. But let's get into that issue. What kind of wine? Does it matter if it's pasteurized or if it's mavushal? Does it matter? Do we make a distinction between the wine which is poured in the glass and that which is left in the bottle? And all these kind of questions. Let's start off with, appropriately, a famous midrash from the Gemara in Megillah. Number one, well, a melech ein shaveh lahanicham. Okay? Says Haman, it's not worth your while to leave these people. These people are an insult to your empire. Why? Says the Gemara here. Da'achlu v'shasu. They eat and they drink. Umavazalei l'malchus. And they insult the kingdom. They insult the king as well. Why? If a fly were to fall into their glass of wine, Zorikai, they throw it on the floor of a shasel, and they drink the wine. They don't care about a fly. But if the king himself would touch the wine of any one of these Jews, they'd fling it on the floor of the Elishas, and they wouldn't drink it. And what could be more insulting than not drinking a glass of wine when somebody else has touched it? And in fact, of course, one of the experts on the Yayin Nesech, on idolatrous and Christian poured wine in the Middle Ages, is Professor Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, who's written extensively on these issues. And he, I don't know if it's his phrase, but he brings the phrase, this was considered insolentia judaeorum, the greatest Jewish insolence. That if the Pope himself, maybe especially if the Pope himself, would touch the wine, then the Jews would not drink it. And this was a source of great tension, to the point that the Jews in the Middle Ages, certainly in Christian Europe, were trying to find ways to minimize the impact of that on their society and their commercial life, which we'll talk to about in a minute. But this has been something which has followed us around for centuries, and Chazal were very, very sensitive to it, which is why they put it into the mouth of Haman, when he comes to accuse the Jews. In order to understand the situation that we're trying to get to about non-observant Jews touching the wine, we have to first go through the processes of how it works with non-Jews. I want to do it quite quickly, because I want to get to the main part of the shir, which is the non-observant Jewish impact, by, I'd say, about 2211. So let's have a look how we can get to on this, 10:45. Where does this start? So this starts with the Pasuk in Avinu, it's my Bar Mitzvah Parsha, Va'amar Ei Eloheimu Tzur Chas Yobo, okay? Where are they gods, the rock on whom they relied, on whom they trusted? Ashachelev zevachemu yochelu. God is saying to the people of Israel, you trusted all this avodah zarah, you ate from the fats of the sacrifices, okay? Yishtu yein nesachim, nesicham, sorry, you drank the wine that you poured for them. Yakumu v'yazrechem, v'yazruchem, let them get up now and help you. Yihi aleichem sit ra, let them be a protection for you. Now, where are they when you really need them? And the Gemara picks up on that pasuk which connects the chelev, the fat of a sacrifice to avodah zarah, with the wine poured for avodah zarah. And if you're looking at the Gemara in avodah zarah number 3, Gemara says, and we even saw this mishnah last week when we talked about cheese. Elu dvarim shel avod ovdei chachamim asurim veisuran isur hana'ah. The following things which non-Jews make are prohibited, not only to eat but also to benefit from one, from hayayin, wine. Says the Gemara, Yain minalan. How do I know that wine made by Ovdei Avodah Zarah, by idolaters, is prohibited for us to drink? Amar Rabba Bar Avua. Rabba Bar Avua says, Amakra, and he quotes this pasuk here, Asher chelev zevachemu yochelu yishtu yein nesicham. Ma zevach asur b'hana'ah, just like a sacrifice to Avodah Zarah is prohibited to benefit from, so too, af yain nami asur bahana'a. So too, the wine poured by Ovdei Avodah Zarah is also prohibited to benefit from. Now, exactly why a sacrifice is prohibited to benefit from is the whole next daf of the Gemara, and it learns a very circuitous route through, connected to a corpse and an egla rufa, ultimately back lahavdil to a Jewish korban, which is prohibited to benefit from once it's been dedicated as a korban under the prohibition of me'ila. And they learn through a complex chain of connections to a non-Jewish sacrifice, and from here also to non-Jewish poured wine. As such, wine poured or used by non-Jews for idolatrous purposes is clearly prohibited, and that prohibition is on a Torah level. It's prohibited to drink on a Torah level, it's prohibited to benefit from on a Torah level. This would include communion wine, if you're popping down to your local church to drink the communion wine. But not just communion wine, there are plenty pagans in the world today, maybe even more pagans than there used to be. I mentioned once that my wife had a colleague once when we lived in England who was a Wiccan witch. At her office where she worked, she was the head of human resources, which was a bit tricky at times. She was a Wiccan witch, and therefore there are all sorts of interesting people with pagan practices. More about that soon with someone specific. In fact, there are suggestions that even toasting, drinking and saying, you know, salu or whatever people say, has its origins in pagan practice, where you would slosh a little bit of wine out of the glass for the gods as a as an offering up to the gods for success, l'chaim, for life, whatever, and then you would drink the wine. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. You can research it. Certainly, there are places and people that feel that is true. As to whether Christianity today is idolatrous, that's a whole different share, which we actually talked about a year and a half ago, when we talked about going into churches. There's a detailed discussion about that, but let's assume for now that it is. Therefore, your local communion wine is going to be a problem. There is another minhag you should know. Yes, sir?
Wine that has been...
Yes, wine has been used for idolatrous or dedicated to idolatrous purposes. The question is not just dedicated. It has to have been poured, really, for idolatrous purposes. It will be also a min ha-Torah. There is another, by the way, minhag, a more Kabbalistic minhag, which you may or may not have heard of, where there are some people that say not only which is wine touched or poured by Ovdei Avodah Zarah. The truth is, the non-Jewish people would have touched it, but that's a little bit different. We'll see it soon. But even wine which is seen or looked at by non-Jewish people, assuming that they're Ovdei Avodah Zarah, is also prohibited. Now, this is not halachic, but there are people, Alpi Kabbalah, who will be knowing like this. There are wine shops you can find in more Hasidisha regions where there's no wine anywhere in the window. And there's no wine anywhere in the shop. There's whiskey, there's vodka. And you'll go and you'll say, I thought this was a wine shop. And they say, of course it's a wine shop. Where's your wine? It's downstairs. You know, we're not going to put the wine on show, because if people look at the wine, that will already, people won't buy it. That's already Alpi Kabbalah. I brought you a source. I brought you a website with sources you can find from the Zohar, from the Shlo. It's well sourced, but it's not halakhically required. It's not looking is not the issue. You can look, but you can't touch, as they say, when it comes to this particular issue. Let's go over the page. So that's wine which is used, poured for idolatrous purposes. But then we get into the issue of stam yenam. What is stam yenam? Stam yenam is regular wine made by non-Jews, not specifically for idolatrous purposes. And we'll see here there are three categories. There's Stam Yenam made by active idolaters. There's Stam Yenam made by anti-idolaters, monotheists. And there's Stam Yenam made by Stam people. The word Stam is very helpful in this particular issue. So let's have a look here at number four. Shalosha Yenos Hain says the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. There are three types of wine. Yain Nesach, which we just talked about, wine for idolatrous purposes. Asur Bahana'a, this is prohibited on a Torah level for to benefit from. Umetamit Tumah Chamurah Kezikazayim. And it imparts the most serious form of Tumah. It will make you tame even with a Kezayim, which is unusual, the liquid has a measure of a Kezayim, in order if you touch it, etc., it will impart serious Tumah. Stam Yenam, however, Stam Yenam, Asur Bahana'a, is also is prohibited to benefit from mashkim veravias, and that will give off a less significant, a less strict form of tumah, which is only in a revias, and it will make the person less tameh. I'm not getting into that now. So that's the second kind of wine, stam yenam, and the third is hamaskid yeno. If you take Jewish wine and you leave it etzel ovid kochavim with a non-Jew unsupervised. There, asur b'shtia, you can't drink it, umutar b'hana'a, but it's permitted to benefit from. Okay, so what's with this stam yenam? Why, according to this Gemara, stam yenam, wine made by non-Jewish people, not for idolatrous purposes, but just to drink, is asur b'hana'a and asur b'shtia. Why? So it says Rashi, in number 5, stam yenam asur b'hana'a, why can't you benefit from a bottle of wine that you pick up in a regular shop? Mishum gzeirat yain nesach. It's a drabona. Yain nesach itself that a non-Jew is poured for idolatry is a Torah prohibition. Stam yenam is a rabbinic prohibition in case they had some kind of idolatrous intention. You never know. And the Rambam spells that out in number 6. Yain shenitnasech la'akum also b'hanaya v'shartem imenu kol shehu loikim in a Torah. Yain which has been poured actually for Avodah Zarah is a Torah prohibition. And then Gimel he says Yain akum she'einanu yoiden im nitnasech or lo nitnasech. Yain stam which we don't know what the non-Jew was thinking when he poured the wine or bottled the wine. V'hu nikra stam yainam, that's called stam yainam. Asur b'hana'a k'moy b'yain b'nitnasech. It's also prohibited, drabonon, like wine which has been poured for Avodah Zarah, which would be Doraisa. The Davazani Gzeira Seifrimhu, and that is on a rabbinic level. And then he explains why. Kol Yain Sheigabar Akab, any wine which has been touched by a non-Jew, Hariza Asur, this is Asur. Why? Shema Nasach Oise, when he poured it, Shemechashevet Ha'akum La'avodit Kachavim. When he poured it, non-Jewish people might have been thinking idolatrous thoughts. And then he goes to talk about Jewish wine, which we said before, touched by a non-Jew. Really, would non-Jewish people have idolatrous thoughts? So Rabbi Yossi Rimon brings the story down, and I can't guarantee the accuracy of the story, but he says he was told by an American businessman that many years ago he was in America in a restaurant, eating a little bit of this, eating a little bit of that, what you can in a non-Jewish restaurant, a bit of lettuce, tomato, whatever, cucumber, maybe not even lettuce, whatever it was. So the wine waiter came along and said, they're pouring wine. So he said, I'm not going to drink the wine. It's okay, now I can't drink the wine. So they asked him around the table, why can't you drink the wine? He said, look, I don't want to offend anybody, but I'm not allowed to drink any wine which is poured by non-Jewish people in case they have idolatrous intentions. So they looked at him and said, really, Be'emet? They probably didn't say Be'emet, but whatever. So, and apparently the waiter said, funny enough, I'm actually a practicing pagan, and when I bring the wine out to the table, I always pour a little bit out in the kitchens to the gods so that I'll have good luck in my job. That's what the story said. And a story which I can verify, my next door neighbor was a businessman in China for many years, and there's very little you can eat in China if you're keeping kosher. And he said he sat one day in a meeting in China from morning till afternoon, and he couldn't eat a thing. They were bringing out one dish after the next of, you know, all sorts of stuff that most people would not want to eat if they don't keep kosher. Anyway, they saw he was starving and he was passing out, and they said, is there nothing we can bring you? Maybe a little bit of fruit? So he said, yeah, fruit will be great, please. A little bit of fruit will be wonderful. So they clicked their fingers, the waitress came in, brought a bowl of fruit, she walked across the room, bowed down with the fruit to the little Getchka on the corner in China there, and put the fruit on the table. What can you do? So he didn't eat the fruit either. But he survived. Yes.
We have another issue with the person who was Christian with the ability of my mother.
Yes.
She told me when she saw our wine bottle on the table on Shabbos, she said, "That's the wine they use in church."
Oh. Well, that's the really. They buy kosher wine to use in church in the old city. Okay, so if you run out of Kiddush wine, you know where to go. Okay. Maybe not. Okay, fine. So Stam Yenam is prohibited on the basis that you never know if it could be idolatrous or not. Fine. However, the Gemara in Shabbos gives a completely different reason. Look in number 7. These are some of the halachas, or these are the list of the halachas that were made by in the attic of Hanani ben Chizki ben Gurion. More about him in a minute. When they went up to visit Nimnu, they'd made a count of the Sanhedrin there. Verabu Beishamai al Beit Hillel, and they found that Beishamai were more than Beit Hillel, which was unusual. Beit Hillel were usually the majority. For Yudchis Dvarim Gadru Baba Yom, and they pushed through legislation quick. 18 new things when the Beishamai were in the majority. In the process of the development of Torah Shebaal Peh, it's actually a very, very important day. Because this is a day towards the end of the Second Temple period where Bet Shammai asserted authority over Bet Hillel in a very forceful, maybe even violent way, and pushed through all sorts of interesting chumras that they felt were necessary in Tumah and Tahara and relationships with non-Jewish people, etc. And this is one of the interesting vignettes as to the Second Temple period. Was there was a mass breakdown in the Jewish community. Sinat Chinam, people were killing each other in civil wars, and there's a famous story of the Kohanim running up the ramp in the Beit HaMikdash, and one of them stabs the other to stop them from getting to the top of the ramp, and the father goes up to his dying son, who's had a knife thrust in his chest, and pulls out the knife and says, "Baruch Hashem, I managed to get the knife out before my son died. The knife is not Tameh. Baruch Hashem, we didn't cause Tumeh in the Mikdash." And the Gemara says, you see what people's priorities were coming to? And at that point, I heard Rabbi Shechter say, this is what they felt they needed to push through. More chumras in Tumeh and Tahara. It's like it's a complete disconnect. It's a cognitive dissonance in what's going on in society. And in fact, the Gemara says, in number 18, in this Yerushalmi, Oysah Yom HaYakashli Yisrael Kiyom Shinaseh BoHa'Egel. This day was hard for the Jewish people, like the day that they worshipped the eagle, the fighting when they were killing each other. If you remember, Moshe Rabbeinu and the Levium killing the people who would worship the eagle, that kind of bloodshed, says the Gemara, Tana Rabbi Yeshua Onunya, okay? Talmidim Beit Shammai Amdu Lahenu Minamata, the Talmidim of Beit Shammai stood at the bottom of the stairs. They posted guards to stop their majority being watered down in case Beit Hillel rabbis came running in. Sounds like a Knesset meeting, right? Okay. V'hayu horigim b'talmidei Beit Hillel, and they would kill anyone who tried to get up. Tani shisha mehem alu. Six of them went upstairs to guard upstairs. V'hashar amdu aleim b'charagot uberamachim, and they stood over them with swords and with spears. It was a very, very, very difficult time for the Jewish people. Why am I telling you this? Because one of those 18 things, look at number 9, Gazru al-Pitan u-Shamnam Mishum Yenam, they made a gezerah on non-Jewish cooked bread and on non-Jewish oil because of the wine. Oil and bread we're not talking about today. The al-Yenam, and they made a gezerah on the wine, Mishum Banoisehem, because of their daughters. What's that got to do with daughters? Okay. Because of intermarriage. According to the Gemara in Shabbos, the Gezerah on Stam Yenam was not because of idolatry specifically, it was because of intermarriage. The people you drink with are the people you go out with, and the people you go out with are the people you get married to. And Adayom Azeh, that's how it still works. Alcohol is a great social lubricant and gets people friendly with each other, and therefore no drinking with non-Jewish people, certainly not wine which is poured by non-Jews, because you'll come and marry their daughters. Interestingly, the Lechem Mishnah understands that the Magid Mishnah is not just about intermarriage, but it's also Yichud, which actually sounds very plausible in many ways. If you look for a second in number 10, says here, Harav Magid Sover Mishum Benoiseim. What does it mean because of their daughters? Hayu Yichud Benoiseim. It was Yichud. Now, Yichud is a different kind of concern. Yichud is not a concern you might marry non-Jewish girls when you drink with them. The yichud is a concern that the drinking will lead to places that you didn't expect, which will end to yichud, and it'll end in other things that you regret the next day, which is also speaks very true in many ways. And we'll see that distinction makes a big difference. The Lecha Mishnah doesn't like that because yichud itself is a drabonon with a non-Jewish woman, therefore you wouldn't make a gezerah on a gezerah, but it's interesting that he feels that that might be part of the whole issue. So, which is it? How does that work? Maybe it's both, we'll see in a few minutes. So there's a gezerah because of potential idolatry and a gezerah because of intermarriage and mixing and maybe yichud. Now, go over the page to page 3. The Rambam makes it clear that if you're drinking the wine of anti-idolaters, people are known to be monotheistic, then there's less of a concern on one of the elements. If you're looking at number 11, Ger Toshav, this is a non-Jew living in Eretz Yisrael, V'hu shekibel alav sheva mitzvahs k'mo shebi'arnu, as someone who's accepted upon themselves the sheva mitzvahs b'nei Noach, they are no longer idolatrous, but they're not Jewish. What's the deal with their wine? Yeno asur b'shtia u'mutar b'hanaya. You can't drink the wine, but you can benefit from it. That's not as bad. Any non-Jew that doesn't worship idolatry, the Rambam's living in a Muslim environment. Muslim wine, Islamic, believers in Islam who prepare wine, you can't drink their wine, and it's mutter to benefit from. Everybody agrees with this, he says. Those people who you know to be idolatrous, Stam Yenam Asa Bahanaya. There's a distinction between wine, Stam Yenam made by idolaters, which you have to assume may be idolatrous, and Stam Yenam made by monotheists, which he says you can't drink, but you are allowed to benefit from. The question is, what about intermarriage? Why is there not a problem? The fact that they happen to be monotheists, what does that help me with the socializing? I still can't marry their daughters, and I still can't end up in yichud with their daughters. So there are different ways of approaching this, and this is 12 and 13, which I'm not going to get into in too much today. The Ran basically says, look, it's a kind of low plug. The original reason for the gezeira, it's one gezeira really was because of the issue of nisuch hayayin, and therefore the rubric of the halacha is based on nisuch hayayin, it's based on avodah zarah. And the issue of Benoi Seim comes kind of afterwards. So if you're not in the same level of Avodah Zarah, then it kind of falls away to some degree, even though the logical reason for Benoi Seim doesn't seem to make much difference. It kind of goes with the Nisuch Hayayin reason. The Kesef Mishnah gives a different understanding. He basically says the original Issa on Shtia was intermarriage, and the Issa on Hana'ah was because of Avodah Zarah. So once the Avodah Zarah goes away, the Hana'ah problem goes away, and the Shtia problem remains, and he answers that way. But that's the position with anti-idolaters. What about Stam Yenam by Stam people? Then this is where we get into today's situation a little bit. Because already the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says in number 14, Yenam, if you're dealing with the wine of non-Jews, Gedolim, Oisim Yain Nesach. Grown-ups, called Yain Nesach. Ketanim, Eloisim Yain Nesach. And children don't. Elohim Gedolim, the Elohim Ketanim. So who are the Gedolim? Who are the Ketanim? Says the Gemara, Gedolim Sheyodim B'tiv Avodah Kachavim, Umasham Asher. Okay, people who understand Avodah Zarah are called Gedolim because they cause the problem with the wine. And Ketanim, She'ein Yodim B'tiv Avodah Kachavim, Umasham Asher. And Ketanim are people who don't really. The point here is not whether they're big or small, or old or young, is, do they know about Avodah Zarah? In which case, yeah, I'm worried. Or do they not know about Avodah Zarah? In which case, I'm less worried. And that basically filters through into a psak in medieval Ashkenaz that said that the non-Jews around us today, yes, they're Christians, and they were Catholic, obviously, but they're not really very firm. They don't really believe in it that much, and therefore, they're like the Ketanim of the Gemara, if you like, in terms of Avodah Zarah. If you're looking at Tosfos, number 15, by Pesha Rashbam, Verivan, he gives a classic portion of Tosfos, Shekosa B'Tshuvas HaGa'onim, Bizman Azeh, already from the Ga'onim, Bizman Azeh, Ein Issa Hana'ah B'Maga Oivik Tachavim B'Yayin. You can't drink the wine, that's for sure. But if they touch the wine, it's not Asa B'Hana'ah, even if they're Christian, even if they're idolatrous, why? כי אוהב לי כוכבים של עכשיו אין רגילים נצח לעבוד לצח לעבוד את כוכבים לצח לעבוד את כוכבים today is עבוד הזרה they don't port to עבוד הזרה anymore really וחשובים כאין יוידים בטיב עבוד את כוכבים. So basically say that they don't really know what they're doing. The wine is not osa b'hano. And the Ramah brings this down in number 16, which was critically important for business, because they used to pay off debts using wine. They used to trade in non-kosher wine. And if it was osa b'hana'a, then they wouldn't be allowed to do any of that. And therefore the Ramah brings down that we assume today that all wine, samyein, obviously not idolatrous wine prepared in a temple somewhere, but regular wine that they sell in a regular wine shop, by a regular non-Jew, whether they're Christian or Muslim or whatever they are, the wine is mutar b'hana'ah and osur to drink. And that's basically the halacha that is the bottom line today. I mentioned last week that I ended up getting a gift when I was a lawyer of a very large amount of non-kosher wine, champagne, and the psak which was given was very clear. I can't drink it, but I can sell it. I can give it away to friends or whatever. I can make money out of it. And that's the halacha. So let's just summarize. As far as non-Jews are concerned, there are basically three levels. Yayin, which is used for actual avodah zarah, is prohibited on a Torah level to drink and to benefit from. Sam yainam, which is made by real ovdei avodah zarah, but it's made just to socialize with, is prohibited to drink and to have hana'ah from, probably or possibly. Sam yainam, made by other people, i.e. monotheists, or just regular people who don't have to assume are ovdei avodah zarah, is prohibited to drink and it's permitted to benefit from. And the underlying rationale behind that prohibition is twofold. Number one, there might be a concern of avodah zarah, which might go away the less involved in avodah zarah people are, but there's still a concern of intermarriage. I might marry their daughters, and therefore their prohibition remains. And there is still a prohibition, clearly, on wine which has been poured and touched, etc., by non-Jewish people. So let's move that now into the real question, which is just about on time, which is non-observant Jews. What are we going to say about them? Now, at first glance, there really should be no problem, right? Because if the concern is avodah zarah, so a non-observant Jew is not an oved avodah zarah. If they're a mummer avodah zarah, if they've become an apostate and they're now Pablo Cristiani, then I imagine that they probably are into avodah zarah, probably frumer in avodah zarah than the non-Jews are at the time. Okay. But a regular non-observant Jew in today's day and age is not interested in avodah zarah, so why would I be concerned that the wine could have been poured for avodah zarah? They're not pagans. And also, what's the problem with intermarriage? So there's a concern, I might marry their daughter. Okay, good. The daughter might be very nice. Just because the father is not Shomer Shabbos doesn't mean I can't marry the daughter. Actually, that's not so straightforward. And there are poskim that say that there may be some level of an issanebiyah drabanon in marrying the daughter of someone who is an Ovid Avodah Zarah, a non-observant Jew, but that's not the halacha. The halacha is that you're allowed to marry the children of parents who are non-observant. Baruch Hashem, but that's the halacha, because a lot of people are married to such people, and very often they don't follow in the ways of their parents, they do different things. There's a famous tshuva of Rav Moshe, where he deals with a shaila by a young man who's marrying a girl who's Baal Tshuva, and her parents are non-observant people. And she said, doesn't it say in the Gemara that a child born from a relationship where the husband and wife were not observing Tarat HaMishpacha is pagum? There's some pagam, in a sense. There's something not entirely appropriate about the child. And he asked Rav Moshe, am I allowed to marry that girl? And Rav Moshe is absolutely insistent that whatever the Gemara says there and whatever it means, it has no halachic implications for who you can marry. He says if the girl has good midas and she's a nice person and she's appropriate for you, it doesn't make any difference what her parents said, you should marry her, give them sahayit, have mazal and bracha, etc., etc. So there should be no problem marrying the child of someone who's non-observant. So what could be the problem of the wine be? There's no avodah zarah and there's no intermarriage problem. By the way, if the problem is yichud and inappropriate sexual connection because everybody is drunk too much, then that still is a problem, because that can happen with anybody, okay, and does. Ein apitropos la'arayas. That could still be a problem, but if it's the other ones, it's less. And the Havanishah number 17, which I'm not going to read now, because it basically quotes, I'm not going to read the whole thing, it quotes, why should there be a problem? And he says, he knows there is a potentially a problem, but he's asking why. He says, if you just pick it up in the second line from the bottom, Ubu Rambam, he says, Loi his killer is the Zeh, the is the Yain Shal Yisrael, Mumma, She'ein Ovid Avodah Zarah. The Rambam never mentions the problem with a non-observant Jew if they're not into Avodah Zarah. The Amnam, he says, nevertheless, but Beis Yosef, I'm on the last line, number 17, in the Yoredeh, he says, the Bet Yosef, Hevi Tshuvat HaRashba. And we'll see that Rashba is going to come back to, you know, connect with us. The Rashba does bring down Sheposhetloi. It's obvious to him, Shemachalel Shabbos Befarahesia, that someone who is a public Shabbos breaker, or Kaitse B'Divrei Chazal, or they don't agree with Teresh Baal Peh, okay, Oise Yayin Nesach. They make the wine, Yayin Nesach. V'loi Nidgala Makara, but says the Chazon Ish, and I don't know where he got that from. Don't know where that's from. Really? Why? That seems to be what the Beis Yosef says, but it's not clear why. And I want to try and help us understand why that might be. So let's have a look first, just miss out 18 and 19. For now, 18 is the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish wants to, the Chazon Sofer. The Chazon Sofer wants to suggest it maybe just be a knas, that Chazal made a knas, made some kind of a penalty that people who are not Shomer Shabbos, you can't drink their wine because that'll encourage them to become more Shomer Shabbos. In which case, will it really today? You know, if you make a knas, will they just not become even less Shomer Shabbos or whatever? And the Rambam wants to say that maybe it's just like a low plug again. That you've decided that this person is like a non-Jew for all purposes, even if the reasons don't necessarily compute. But we'll see more about that now. Where do they even get this from? Where does the Rashba get this idea that there could be a problem with a non-observant Jew? So let's have a look at it now. There are good sources for this, and we'll see. We have to go a long way back to King Yehoshaphat. What's Yehoshaphat got to do with anything? Look at number 20. Says the Gemara in Chulin, Yisrael mumul avodis kachovim, if a Jew becomes an apostate for idolatry, mutal echol mishchitaso, you're allowed to eat from their shchita. Just because they do avodah zarah doesn't mean they don't shecht properly. Okay? We'll see more about that in a minute. Shekein matzinu b'Yehoshaphat, we see with Yehoshaphat, melech Yehuda, shenene misudas achav. He went to eat with Achav, and Achav was an apostate. He was an Ovid of Ovid Zarah, with, together with his lady wife Izebel. Okay, wasn't even Jewish. Okay, but apparently he ate from his shchita. He didn't ask to eat the fish. Okay, he ate from the meat. Shenemar, as it says, v'yizbach loy Achav tzoinu bakala roiv. Yehoshaphat went to do a deal with Achav to fight with Achav, and he shechted large numbers of cows. Ula ama she'imor, and a lot of people that were with him as well. He shechted for everybody. V'yisitehu alot, okay, el Ramot Gilad, and he persuaded him to go up to Ramot Gilad, where they fought a battle, where in fact Achav was in the end killed. Yeah. Says the Gemara, how could Yehoshaphat eat from this food? So the Gemara says, Dilma mizbech zevach, mechel lo yachol. Maybe he shechted, but Yehoshaphat said, it's actually, I will eat the fish, thank you very much. It doesn't say he ate. It says that Achav shechted. Maybe Yehoshaphat said, I'm not eating it. He says, no. V'yisitev, it says he persuaded him, he was pally-pally with him, he must have eaten it there. It says, Dilma mishtashti, mechel lo yachol. Maybe he just drank the wine and didn't eat the meat. Why were they all drinking wine, by the way? Rav Chaim Soloveitchik says, until the modern era, there was really very little else to drink but wine. Okay? People didn't drink water, even to the middle, to the modern period, because the water was contaminated. If you go to Europe in the Middle Ages, you hadn't got tea, you hadn't got coffee, and they hadn't discovered whiskey. I mean, what can you drink? Come on. There's no tea, and there's no coffee, and there's no whiskey, and there's no water. Beer. Beer and wine. Beer and wine was all there was, and that's what people were drinking. So, maybe he just drank, and he didn't eat. So why would that be okay? So the Gemara says, third line, Maisha Nishtia, why would drinking be different? Damrinan mumala vodis kachavim loy havi mumala kol Torah kula. Because maybe we'd say that a mumma for a vodis zara isn't an entire mumma for the whole Torah as well. And you're allowed to drink their stuff, so then also you're allowed to eat their food. Achila nami mumala vodis kachavim loy havi mumala kol Torah kula. Fine. Then this is the main point I want to say in the Gemara. Hachi Hashi says, how can you compare eating and drinking? The wine's different. Why? Shtia stam yeinam hu. The wine that Yehoshaphat would have been drinking would have been stam yeinam poured by Achav. Va'adayin loy nesa yeinam shaloy dekachavim. And they hadn't yet made the gezera on stam yeinam. Stam yeinam was a gezera from the time of Hillel and Shammai. This was many hundreds of years before that. So the Gemara is saying, of course, Yehoshua Kafat could drink Achav's wine because they hadn't yet made the Gezeira. The implication being that if they had made the Gezeira, could you drink the wine of Achav? You could not. And therefore you see from here the implication being that someone who is a Mumma La Avodah Zarah, even if he's Jewish, Mumma being like a rebel for Avodah Zarah, that you can't drink their wine. It doesn't say anything about Shabbos, but it says for Avodah Zarah. However, there is a concept of a Mumma for Shabbos as well. If you look in number 21, this is in Hilchos Eruvin, the question is raised as follows, Amar Rav Huna, Eze Yisrael Mumma, what is the definition of an apostate or rebellious Jew? Zeh Machalel Shabbosos B'Farhesia. Someone who breaks Shabbos in public. And we're going to have to define soon what public means. But they don't make the connection. They don't make the connection here between the wine and Chilul Shabbos. Nowhere in Chazal does it say that someone who is a Machalel Shabbos B'Farhesia, also you can't drink their wine. But the equation is not hard to make. Again, let's think it through. It seems to be, it says in Chulin, that someone who is a Mumar for Avodah Zorah, if they're Jewish, you cannot drink their wine. And the Gemara in Shabbos, in Erevin rather, says that another example of a Mumar is a Machalel Shabbos Farahesia. It doesn't take too long before you start putting two and two together, and that is exactly what the Bahag did. Look over the page number 5, number 22, says the Bahag, he's living in the time of the Gaonim in the 8th century in Babel, Mushumad La Avodah Zorah. Anyone who has gone over a Jew to do Avodah Zorah, Ula Chalel Shabbos Farahesia, and anyone who is Machalel Shabbos Farahesia, Oise Yain Nesach. You can't drink the wine. Ulagabi Meshumad, Shabbos Avodah Zorah Kehadadi Ninhu. Because as far as we're concerned, Shabbos and Avodah Zorah are basically the same thing. So here you see for the first time explicitly, a source clearly says, an early source, even though it's not in the Gemara, it's after, that wine which is touched by, poured by, etc., by a Jew who is Machalel Shabbos Farahesia, you cannot drink that wine either. The Sefer Eshkol says, of course, it's not Otah B'Hana'ah. It's not going to be worse than Stam Yenam, which today is Mutar B'Hana'ah. You can benefit from it, but you're not going to be allowed to drink it. And that's where the Rashba is coming from. If you look in 24, the Bet Yosef, which we saw from the Chazon Ish, quotes this Rashba, and it says, V'od, Mipi Rabbeinu Yonah, Sheshama Mechachmei Tzarfat, Rabbeinu Yonah, the names of the rabbis of France, Hamashumad L'Chalal Shabbat L'Farahetia, someone who is a Jew who breaks Shabbos publicly, or She'enu Ma'am in B'divrech Rabbi Seinu, doesn't believe in the words of Chazal, who min, this is a heretic, V'yeno Yain Nesach, and his wine is Yain Nesach. Again, not literally Yain Nesach, but wine that you can't drink, and you maybe can have benefit from. V'en in Chilul Shabbos, Vavra Direi Rabbi Seinu, okay, L'da'ato She'oibid Avodah Zorah, who made basic, who dafka She'haya Muchsechba. It's only if you know for sure that they definitely do these things. Shalosh Pamim. Aval B'Pam Achad Oshtayim Eino Osi Yain Nesach. Or, so maybe someone who is not quite sure if they're a Mechalel Shabbos Farahesia, maybe that's a little bit different, and we'll see that coming out soon. U'mifnei Asara, they have to do it in front of 10 people, Tarech She'ichalel, etc., etc. Now the Shulchan Aruch again doesn't bring this explicitly in Shulchan Aruch. He brings the din of Avodah Zorah for a Jew who worships Avodah Zorah, that their wine is Yain Nesach. And he also says that a Shabbos breaker is, Befarahesia, is a Mumma as well. But he doesn't make the connection with the wine. The Ramah, however, does make a bit more of a connection. Look in 27. And the Ramah says as follows about the conversos in Spain. What about the wine made by the conversos in the 16th century in Spain? These are people who outwardly live as non-Jews, as Catholics. Can you drink their wine or not? So look at what it says here in 27. Ha'anusim, those who have been forced to convert. Afilu tayvim shebehem, even the best natured and best, you know, willed of them, enem yicholim nizam imaga avodah kachavim. They can't stop non-Jews from touching the wine. I mean, real non-Jews, who were always non-Jews, you can't trust the wine. They may be, you know, trustworthy to some degree, but they can't protect the wine from non-Jews. It's going to be trade. Says the Ramah, the Ein Oistrim Yain B'Maga'am, but they themselves do not make the wine into Yain Nesach, because they're forced. The Dafka Oisem Shedarim Adayim Beino Dichachavim, and I'm talking, he says, about the ones who live amongst non-Jews, the Oisem Averis B'Farhesia, Mipnei Oines, and they do everything in public that they do because they're forced to do that. Rak b'tzinan is harim, but in private, they live as Jews. And we all know those stories, the curtains are closed, the Shabbos candles are lit, but outwardly, they're Catholics. The Eshelahem Nibroach HaNafsham, couldn't they have run away? Maybe. Rak Shemam Tini Mishum Mammon, they stayed behind because they don't want to leave their money. Oki Yotzeboi, we're not judging them, says the Ramah. Inwardly, they're from Jews, behind the curtains, they live as Jews, you can drink the wine. About im oibrin gambit sinna alaveris. But if they basically, even in private, they're not keeping mitzvahs anymore. Afal pisha asum itchilabayin is even though they started off as forced, hari heim koiv de kohabim. Ma yaseh, what can we do with these people? They are. But it's very interesting, he's dealing with this issue of yain nesach with the conversos, and he's saying, well, some do, and some don't. Now, already Tosfos pick up classically in the Middle Ages, what does it mean to be Machal Shabbos of Parhesia? And they already say, well, that means that you'd break Shabbos in front of somebody chashuv. It's not just that you break Shabbos in public. You might break Shabbos in public because nobody knows you there and you're not worried, but would you break Shabbos in front of the Rav HaRashi? So there are some people who would ask to break Shabbos in front of the Rav HaRashi. But there are many people who would not break Shabbos in front of the Rav HaRashi, and therefore the Mishnah Berurah already brings down from this Tosfos, and this will segue into the modern period. Looking at number 29, who is the Mechalel Shabbos Parhesia? Says the Mishnah Berurah, the im mitbayesh la'asot zeh mifnei adam gadol, if they would be embarrassed to break Shabbos in front of a senior person, af she'oise davar zeh mifnei kama anashim, even though they would do it in front of other people, gam zeh letzina yichashek. This is called, they're not a public Shabbos breaker, they're a private Shabbos breaker. Now that's already going to open up a lot of ptachim for us. But first of all, there are many people who might break Shabbos when nobody's watching or they're okay with their friends, but in front of other people they'd be very respectful. Already these people seem to have been taken out of the problem. They are not Mechalel Shabbos Parhesia. And again, let's focus now on the real issue, which is Shmir Shabbos. Nobody's really concerned right now in the Shaila, in the Israel Museum, that maybe the person pouring the wine is the Mumma Avodah Zorah. Let's leave Avodah Zorah behind. The question is, are they Shomer Shabbos? So the first thing we see here is, even if they're not Shomer Shabbos, if they would be Shomer Shabbos, or if they wouldn't be Mechalel Shabbos in front of somebody that they respect, that's already a different matter. Now we get into the modern period, and I want to look at you in a little bit more detail, Baruch Hashem, we've got some time, at three tshuvas. The first person to deal with this in a specific, focused way is Rav Yaakov Ettlinger. Rav Yaakov Ettlinger was the Rav in Germany in the 19th century. He writes a tshuva in 1860. Now, 1860, look here at the first line, he says number 30. He says it's in Altona on the 29th of Cheshvan in Tafresh Chaf Aleph. That's early, that's fall, the autumn in 1860. Now, Altona is Hamburg. It's next to Hamburg. And Hamburg was the origins of Reformed Jewry in the 1820s, early 18, it's just before 1820. So by 1860 already we're dealing with a very advanced move of reform into German Jewry, and there are many secular Jews who are living in society as Reformed Jews and not keeping Shabbos. And he wants to address what is the deal with the wife. So the first thing you see in this tshuva is he calls it Psakim Shaloi LaHalacha LaMaisa. I'm giving you a psak, but it's, so rely on it. Why does he start that way? Because he has to start that way, because he knows he's about to say something very innovative, and he wants to warn off the flak, and if he gets flak from his right wing, he'll say, excuse me, I said it's Shaloi Alocha Lamaisa. And if he gets the flak from the left wing, he'll say, yeah, but I paskin that way. So, you know, so he's trying to feel out exactly how he can get his psak in. So look what he says. First of all, he says, let's get this clear. There is, in principle, a problem of wine which is touched by Mechalel Shabbos Parhesia. Let's read this from the beginning. Masha Kaza Malas Kvok Toraso, he quotes the question here, Shehuayah Noeg Lesel B'Shtiyas Yayin Shenagabo Yisrael Mechal Shabbos Parhesia. He won't drink wine which is touched by non-observant Jews. Let's call it non-observant Jews, meaning Mechalel Shabbos. Okay? By the way, if you're not Mechalel Shabbos, if you're non-observant in another area, someone who is not Makpid in, I don't know, Lashon Hara, can you drink their wine? Yes, I mean, let's hope so. Otherwise, then we've all got trouble, okay? Someone who is not Makpid in eating kosher, yes. It's only Shabbos that's an issue. The fact that someone walks up to you and pours you a glass of wine, and the guy's not wearing a kippah, or the girl's wearing skinny jeans and a... That doesn't mean that they're not Shom Shabbos. In today's world, it's very interesting. There's a difference between Israel and America, I think, here. If somebody in America walks up to you looking outwardly quite secular in dress, the chances are that they probably are not connected with the Jewish community. Somebody can walk up to you in Israel and at first glance look that way, but actually they are Shom Shabbos. It's a different society. And therefore you can't make a judgment from the way that people are dressed. Maybe you should never do that, but you certainly can't do that, because if they don't happen to be Makbid in Hilchot Sneas or whatever, that doesn't mean that they're not Shom Shabbos in that sort of sense, and therefore the wine is fine. But he says, if they're really not Shom Shabbos, yes, he says, you have a problem. He brings it for the Mabit, who talks about the Karites. So look in the, like, the fourth line down. The Fiani Asdaiti, Hadinimo, I agree with you. The Chaybandu, Mechalil Shabbos for Hesihu, Kamumma Lachala Tara, okay? Dinoi Ka'ivit Kachavit. Yes, he's Mechalil Shabbos. He's considered a mumma, a rebel for the whole Torah. You can't drink the wine that he pours. Okay? I'm not going to say that the only reason for the gezerah was you can't intermarry the daughters. The Harib knows mechalal Shabbos loy nesru, and here you could marry the daughters just because he's not mechalal Shabbos. He's not Shem Shabbos. You can't say the daughters prohibited. I don't agree with that argument. The in came mumal abedis kachavim loy yetsu yam b'shtia. Well, if female, I'm reading the bechulin also, because by that token, even a mumal for avodah zara. Why would you prohibit the wine? Because, you know, the daughters are also, if a stamianum, the daughters are also permitted. And clearly the wine, he says, from the case of Yehoshaphat, is also. But Tzarek Kalayim, Kamashikaz of Haran, the Chidush Hisham, and he says it must be that there's a kind of capsule, there's a loy plug. If you're a mummer, you're a mummer, and your wine is prohibited. Fine. Vihine, now go to the next paragraph. Ad kai dibarnu me'ika hadin. Everything I've said so far is in principle. Yes, the wine touched by Mechalel Shabbos Parhesia is prohibited. Eich ladun Mechalel Shabbos Parhesia. How do we judge Mechalel Shabbos Parhesia? So far, that's what I've talked about in principle. Aval lepoishe Yisrael shebizmanim. What are we going to do with the sinners of our day? We call them poishim. They don't keep mitzvahs. Lo yadana ma'adun mahem. I don't know what to do with these people walking around Altona in 1860. Why? So there are many sins. Pashta abaheres, pashta abaheres laroiv. The baheres, the if you like, the tzaras on the skin has now spread to most of the community. Achibarubam chilul Shabbos nasa kehesa. For most of these people, breaking Shabbos for them is just like hesa. They don't even realize that it's so serious. Maybe they have a din of an oimem mutter. Shirak korav lemezid. It's not really amazed. They just think everything's fine. The yesh bahem, and there are even people, he says, shemit palan in tefillah Shabbos. They go to hashgoma, and that, by the way, was the origin of many of the hashgoma minyanim. They go to daven in some places. Okay, umekachim kiddush, and then they make kiddush. Kiddush ayoyim. Va'achakach mechalal in Shabbos malachas the writer of the rabbanon, and then they go to work. They go to the games, or they go to work. The game is less of a problem. They go off to work, they go to be Mechal Shabbos, but they first daven, they first make Kiddush. The Hari Mechal Shabbos Nechshav Kamuma. Why is the Mechal Shabbos considered a heretic? Because Mechal Shabbos means you deny the existence of the Creator. You deny the existence of creation. This person just stood up and said, I accept the existence of God as the creator of the universe. I make Kiddush. I say, Makadish HaShabbos. And then I go to work. You're going to tell me this person is a mumma? He's not denying. He's doing it because he feels he has no choice, or she has no choice. They're not anusim. It's not like the converters. No one has a gun to their head. But they're kind of mixed up in this sense. By the way, Rav Blight, he has a very good article on this. I gave you a reference to it. He brings an example of two shaylos who were asked in the 1920s from a Jew like this. And as I'm sure many of you will know people and know people's parents, whatever, that they were Mechalel Shabbos, but they were otherwise Jews who wanted to keep halacha. So one shaylos goes like this. The guy said, he comes over from Europe, and he works on Shabbos now, but he doesn't trust the shechita of the local shochet. Okay? So he wants to know. He wants to shecht his own animals because he's... you know, trust his own shechita. But he says, but I'm a mechalel Shabbos. Can I eat my own shechita? Isn't that an interesting question? Okay, can he eat his own shechita? And then he asked, the same fellow asked the following question. And the reason that we don't wear tefillin on Shabbos is because Shabbos isn't ice. Shabbos is a sign of our connection with God. And tefillin is a sign of our connection with God. And you can't have one sign when you've got the other sign. So we don't wear tefillin on Shabbos. Is I don't keep Shabbos. Maybe I should put tefillin on Shabbos. Because if I can't have one ice, I should have the other. These are very painful shilas. Because these are coming from people who want to be Shomer Mitzvahs very deeply, but are conflicted in that way. So he's dealing with the same area. So that's with these people. I don't know what to do with these people because they make Kiddush and then they go to be Mechal Shabbos. And then you get on to their children. They don't know what they're doing. They haven't even heard of a lot of the hills of Shabbos. These are like the Tzdukim. We don't consider the Sadducees to be heretics. Well, they may be heretics in terms of they're not mumrim. The fact they don't keep halacha. FLP, shemachal in the Shabbos, mipnei shemase avoseim biyadeim. They're just doing what their parents brought them up as. And then he coins the phrase. V'heim katinok shenishba. He coined this phrase. I mean, it's in the Gemara. He didn't coin the phrase. But the Gemara is not talking about that. The Gemara is talking about a real case of a baby who was kidnapped by non-Jews and brought up as a non-Jew. And the Gemara says that the psak ultimately is that they are shoygeg. And they're not mated. You know, they don't know what they're doing in that. So let me just go on a second. Then and then he goes on and talks about that. He says even better than the cases of the Stukim, because at the end of the day, in other areas, he goes on to say that these people do keep other areas of halacha. They have a proper bris milah. They don't rebel against this. It's just Shabbos. They have a problem with Shabbos, that they don't keep Shabbos, probably because they're clueless for the large part. And look at what he says then in the conclusion. L'chei. If one of these sinners today touches the wine, I agree. If you want to be machmir, l'stam yenom tavo alav bracha. I can't fault you for being machmir. Because me'ika hadin, there is a problem with mechalel Shabbos touching the wine. Achen gam le'mekilim yesh lehem ha'mashiach. But I can't fault you if you want to be lenient as well. Because you have on what to rely. Unless we know for sure this person knows what Shabbos is, and they would be arrogant enough to break Shabbos publicly, as we saw in front of Gedolim, in front of Asar of Israel. Okay, if it's one of them, then you're not going to think about it. But if it's just a regular Joe that doesn't know what Shabbos is, I can't follow you if you're drinking the wine. Yeah.
I had a very good friend whose father, after World War II, had a trace. Butcher store, which
you walk
to my Shabbat, but
all
the Jewish people don't
buy your meat. Baruch Hashem. Rav Ettlinger's approach was accepted by some others as well. Rav Chaim Ozer Grudzinski takes the same approach. The Rav Yitzchak Shmelkes and the Beit Yitzchak takes the same approach in the 19th and early 20th century. Rav Yehuda Ahzon, the Yehuda Yaleh, Shas Shuvah Yehuda Yaleh, also takes the leading approach for a different reason. He says, first of all, I'm not sure. The status of a mumar is a drabonon status for a mechalel Shabbos, not a doraisa status. And samyenam is also a drabonon. And you put that together, you get two levels of drabonon. He says, I'm not sure that that's what we have to be machmir on in this situation. Especially since the reasons don't seem to apply. They're not really doing a avodah zara. You can really marry their daughters. And he wants to try and be makel on that. And he also comes up with an interesting idea that how do you know he's a public Shabbos breaker? Yeah, well, I see them. No, he says, unless someone brings testimony to a formal Beis Din that this Yid is a public Shabbos breaker, I'm not considering to be a public Shabbos breaker. Okay, if you go down that line, then there aren't that many public Shabbos breakers. He also wants to say to be lenient. And Rav Avadya quotes his words, look in 31, V'chazise l'ga'on mareno harav Yehuda Asad. Okay, he quotes that from Yehuda Yaleh. And these are his words, basically, or Rav Avadya Yosef's summary of them. This generation, he says, is so, it breaks these laws so much. We shouldn't be pushing them away. This is 100 years ago. We shouldn't be, more than 100 years ago, we shouldn't be pushing them away. We think that if we push them away, they'll get better. We should be bringing them closer. And I don't even think if you're even a Baal Nefesh, If you're particularly careful about halacha, I don't even think here you have to be machmer on this issue. Milishdot yayin shenagabah mechalel Shabbos keilu is one of them. Very lenient approach in that sense. Rav David Tzvi Hoffman, go over to page 7 for a minute, says also, in his time there's no such thing as public Shabbos breaking. He was in Germany in the early 20th century. Because public is like private, because nobody cares anymore. So we've got so used to it. There's a story they tell about the Chofetz Chaim. Don't know if it's true or not true. But they say they persuaded him, his Talmidim, to leave Radin for a Shabbos and come to one of the big Eastern European cities. So he went there. No one was Machal Shabbos of RSC in Radin. So he goes to Vilna or Riga or wherever it is, and he goes there for Shabbos, and everybody, all the Jews, Machal Shabbos, many Jews. So he cries through most of the Shabbos, and they felt bad that he cried through most of the Shabbos. And then eventually they persuade him to come back some months later. And he cried even more. So they said to him, why did you cry even more? Now you are used to it, no? He said, yeah, that's why I cried even more. Because the first time I was shocked, and now I realize I'm not even shocked by the fact that there are so many people breaking Shabbos, and that's what I'm crying about now. Maybe it's true, but the idea is that as well. So Munkacher Rebbe is absolutely outraged by this whole approach. He says, I do not understand what you're talking about. He quotes Rav Ettlinger. He says he's absolutely astounded that he can go against clear sources in the Rishonim that say that you cannot drink the wine of somebody who's a Machal Shabbos for a Hetzia. I leave you to read this on your own. He's absolutely clear that it's Osser. If you look here, if you pick it up maybe from... The Gam Sham Binyan Sion, I'm about 5 lines from the bottom. Binyan Sion, Nitfas Vafedush, Shalol Aloch Lamaisa. He says, in 1 second, doesn't Rav Ettlinger say at the beginning of his Alocha it's not Lamaisa? Well, he says, I take him at his word. It's not Lamaisa. In Ken Kosher Ken the Samyan and the Chami Asira the Issa, the Kula Almalishtois Gamba Hefsid Mammon, Ubori Hazeka, it's absolutely not allowed. Kosher Ken Shalol Yakilu Boli Shtoiba Atzmeinu, we should be drinking wine. Bishvil the Kare, the Poshem. You could make an argument. No, 1 second. If I drink with these people, I'll have a good impact on them. I can do kiruv. He says, you make that up. Ubavadai Eilasot Zeh Afilu L'Snif L'Hetzeh. You shouldn't even consider that as a consideration. The Paradu Kol Poile Avon. Just push these people away. Adarabba. Zeh Chashash Shegazru Chazal. This is exactly what Chazal were worried about. Kedei Shaloi Yilmad Mimasav. We don't want you to learn from their negative actions. The Anan Nekum of the Nibatul Zoich. We're going to ignore what Chazal said. The Svaras Crazy Eyes. With Boich Svaras. That you think you can be a big Makarev. Ulahati Kedei Shenuchel Lehitchaber Imam. Ulukarvan Bezroah. You're just going to end up like them. They won't end up like you. You'll end up like them. In Cain, he says, Arkain, Bavadai Poshet, Machal Shabbos, Rehesi, Osa, Hayyam, Bamadri. He says, absolutely, they prohibit the wine. Arkorchach Poshet, the Eila Akab, is a cloud. You should never be lenient. The Hashem, Yishmor, Kikerim, Beit Yisrael, Vivar, Hakoitzim. And God should take away all of the thorns and just protect the vineyard. Okay? That's pretty clear. And there are those that follow this, Rav Moshe Sternbuch. Goes down this route, and there's nothing to talk about. You ain't going to the Israel Museum, because if there are Machalel Shabbos, they serve you the wine, then there's nothing you can do. One last thing before we finish. Rav Moshe Feinstein, in many places, is pretty machmir on this. He says, Pasha, that you can't drink it. And then, in this tshuva, in the eighth chelek of Igros Moshe, suddenly comes with a bit of a volt-fast. And he says, and you can read this in number 33 on your own, he says, well, you know something, this halacha is not really in the Rambam, it's not really in the Shulchan Aruch, the Beis Yosef quotes it, but he doesn't bring it in the Shulchan Aruch, the Shach doesn't bring it, he brings it in the Kudus HaKetev, maybe the minag is not to be machmir, and at the end of the day, I'm not sure you need to be machmir on this. And everybody's asking, like, whoa, what happened to Rav Moshe Feinstein's sect? The whole of his life, he paskin not, and now he paskins yes. Well, that's one of the famous tshuvas of the eighth chelik of the Igros Moshe, as to what degree did Rav Moshe have a direct influence in what came out of that eighth chelik. People who are Talmidim of Rav Moshe Feinstein and people who study these things will know about this. But it's in the Igros Moshe, and it's quoted by Poskim, definitely, and therefore I wouldn't just ignore it, but it's a bit difficult to, I just need to get to the finish, sorry. It's difficult to actually give it that much weight. Bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, let me give you some closure. I brought you on page 8 some guidelines. Rav, there are people who are stricter, there are people who are more lenient. Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon, who is my Rav in Alon Shvut, he has some very clear guidelines, and he says the following. And I brought you in the middle of the page. You want to know what to do on this? Well, again, like I said, if they're not Machalal Shabbos or Farah Hesiyah, there is nothing to talk about. The fact that they don't keep this halacha, that halacha, doesn't make any difference. It's fine. If they wouldn't be Machalal Shabbos in front of an Adam Gadol, it's fine. But if they would, let's say, since the main thrust of the poskim is to be stringent, he says, however you can be lenient with pasteurized wine, even if it's not fully mevushel, that there's a debate, is it enough that pasteurization makes it mevushel? So maybe with a non-Jewish person you'd be machmeh, but with this person you wouldn't. One can be lenient with a wine that's left in the bottle, that he didn't yet pour. He says you can be lenient with it, the bottle is just opened by the person and not poured. Even though there are grounds to be strict, he says there are many grounds to be lenient on these issues. With a non-Jewish person, there are far less grounds to be lenient, although I brought you a reference to one of the chapters in Rabbi Cordoza's book. He was speaking at this podium only 12 hours ago. I was listening to him, where he has something of a crusade, let's say, against this particular halacha. But I leave you to read what he says about non-Jews. He has personal input in this as well. Very passionate, very interesting. But I leave you to read what he says. I have a lot of respect for what he says, and the fact that he says it means I don't have to say, which is good. But with a non-Jew, there's definitely much less room to be machmir, to be makel rather, but with a non-religious or non-observant, I should say, Jew, there are many reasons to be makel, and then certainly with family members. With family members who understandably would be deeply offended if their relatives who will not now drink wine that they said, I think there's a requirement to be lenient wherever possible. And therefore, hopefully that gives you an overview of this subject. It's very interesting. It's quite complicated. Next week is Tanit Esther. There will be a share, please God. And we will move on to the topic of what does it mean today that you personally have to do the mitzvah of Mechiyas HaMalek? And how are you going to do that? Okay? Come next week to find out.
Thank you.